You're listening to the top stories of 2016 on WFHB.
We bring you the most significant stories of the year
as they were reported by your friends and neighbors.
The face of Bloomington continues to transform
while local residents fight to save parts of the city they love.
Local people joined protests near and far
as Hoosiers help elect Republicans across state and federal governments.
From local to state to national news,
WFHB brought you the stories affecting our community.
Here are the top stories of 2016 on WFHB.
Welcome to the top stories of 2016. For WFHB, I'm Joe Crawford. Today is number 4 on our countdown, the targeting of Muslim Hoosiers. We're taking a look back at our coverage of issues surrounding the perception and treatment of Muslims in South Central Indiana. As with many of the top stories of this year, it's helpful to go back further than January 1st of 2016 to find context for the issue. In October of last year, Bloomington made international headlines for an incident that was widely seen as a hate crime against a Muslim woman. On October 19, 2015, the Daily Local News reported this story, which is read by anchor Doug Storm.
Bloomington police say a Muslim woman was attacked last night by a 19-year-old IU student at the Sofra Cafe on South Walnut Street. The police released an official statement this afternoon. According to police, the student, Tristan Bickford, shouted the phrases, "White power" and "kill them all," before he attacked the woman. He is accused of strangling her and smashing her head onto the table in an attempt to remove her headscarf. The woman was with her young daughter and husband at the cafe. The husband, with the help of a bystander, subdued Bickford until police arrived. The woman who was assaulted did not sustain any long-term injury, according to the police statement. Bloomington Mayor Mark Cruzan said city officials have reached out to the family.
This is a family that now has this as a memory of Bloomington, and I think the only way we can turn this around at all for the family is to reach out and have them know, that, in particular the daughter, to know that this isn't the way her mother should have been treated, this isn't the way this community is, and that what's happened is such an exception to the rule.
The Bloomington Human Rights Commission does collect some anecdotal data about hate incidents in the city. In its most recent annual report, the commission described 8 incidents. In that report, 6 of the targets were African American. 2 of the incidents involved discrimination based on sexual orientation. There were no reports of religious discrimination, but Cruzan says the city can't track all hate incidents.
It does happen, and it doesn't always rise to the level of the police being involved. And I think, unfortunately, it doesn't always rise to the level that officials who are keeping records of this are even alerted to it. And I want everyone to know, no one should have to live with any kind of discrimination. That is not acceptable, and we want to know about that. And in fact, we record those numbers. It's something that we provide to the media every year. We want people to know what's happened, those who haven't stepped forward to do so, so that we can continue to police it and make sure that we get word out that it is unacceptable behavior and that those who have been victim to it have people who are standing with them.
After Bickford was arrested last night, police say he bit the leg of a police officer. His bail was set at $500 cash, and he was apparently released by today. This afternoon, a staffer at the Monroe County Jail said no one named Bickford was incarcerated there. Bickford's statements on social media don't seem to correspond with his alleged actions yesterday. He posted statements that appear anti-racist. 3 weeks ago, he retweeted a statement by presidential candidate Bernie Sanders decrying what Sanders called attacks on African Americans, Latinos, and Muslims. Charges against Bickford include intimidation, strangulation, and public intoxication. Indiana is one of only a few states that has no hate crime legislation to stiffen penalties for crimes based on bias.
That story was from October 19, 2015. In February, a judge granted an attorney's request to have Tristan Bickford mentally evaluated. Charges are still pending, and he is scheduled for a plea hearing on January 23rd. It was about 6 weeks after Bickford's arrest that tensions spiked nationwide. Two California residents committed a terrorist attack in San Bernardino, killing 14 people and seriously injuring 22 more. The attackers were reportedly inspired by Islamic terror organizations. The San Bernardino killings were the catalyst for one of Donald Trump's most infamous statements during the presidential campaign. Trump called for an all-out ban on Muslims entering the United States, quote, until our country's representatives can figure out what the hell is going on, unquote. In Bloomington, it was only a matter of weeks before the community began to mobilize. Local residents founded the Open-Hearted Campaign, an effort to encourage understanding between Muslims and non-Muslims. That multifaceted campaign helped produce a series of interviews called the Hijabi Diaries, which WFHB aired during much of the spring and summer of this year. This next piece is an episode of the Hijabi Diaries that aired during the daily local news. It's introduced by WFHB anchor Carolyn Vandeweel.
In today's episode, we hear from Miriam, a woman who has experienced a lot of prejudice since moving to Bloomington, more than she did when she was an undergraduate student in New Hampshire in the early 2000s. She fears for her safety and the safety and happiness of her young son. She has enjoyed living in America, but she doesn't want her son to grow up to believe he is separate or other, and she fears that he is starting to learn just that.
The Sisters of the Islamic Center of Bloomington invite you to explore hijab from a personal perspective. We want to share the importance of hijab, why we choose to wear it, and what it means to us, in the hopes that by listening to our stories, you will come to better understand who we are as Muslims, women, and humans. The Hijabi Diaries. Muslim women speaking for themselves.
Firmness is my treasure. Patience is my mentor.
Yeah, so I made the decision to wear hijab when I was about 20 years old. I had started thinking about it since I was in high school. Not because my mother wore it, which she did at like 30, 36 years of age, or because my dad asked, but because I felt that it was the right decision for me, spiritually and psychologically. The decision to wear hijab took me 4 years of thinking. I was between the tide and ebb of my desire to look beautiful in front of everyone, just like any teenage girl, and between my inner nature of abiding by rules and thus obeying one of Allah's most honoring commands. I used to pray and fast and give alms when I can, but I felt that I need to do more to please God. The urge to wear hijab started when I was reading a part of the Quran and came across one of the verses about modesty and covering. The sublime and pure meanings of and reasons for wearing hijab are the reasons that kept me between that tide and ebb. I could not wear it right away because I was afraid that I would not be able to abide by all the virtues of being a muhajjaba. After 4 years, I took the decision, finally, and was totally ready for that big step in my life. I never shared my wish to wear hijab with anyone before because I didn't want, or before wearing it, because I didn't want any pressure. So it was a surprise, a big surprise to my parents, to my grandfather, my uncles, and to my whole family. But however, to my grandfather and uncles, it was a big shock as they tried to convince me that I'm too young to cover. I can always do that when I'm married and have kids. A lot of people supported me though and congratulated me on taking this step. But it took my grandfather a while to get used to seeing me with hijab. Although he was a man who would go to the mosque 5 times a day for prayers, and he was very religious, but hijab just was not like as a strong requirement in his point of view, but it was in mine.
Science is my weapon.
So tell me about yourself.
I am an ordinary person with no like specific or special things in my life. I am the only daughter from my parents, and I have three younger brothers. I have spent most of my life studying in Morocco and a couple of years in the U.S. where I got my BA. And then I worked as a teacher for 2 years and then resumed my master's in international studies and diplomacy. And then I got married and then I had a child.
So what was it like coming from Morocco to live in the United States? What's different, would you say?
Well, let's see. It was definitely how people look at me here. Mm-hmm. So in Morocco, I was kind of invisible. But in my community, it was, you know, I would say more respected than other people for, like, my achievements, academic or, you know, life achievements in general.
Because you're so smart.
Oh, thank you. But
you seem
here,
like quite a smart lady.
Oh. But here, I feel like people would not, not the majority. It's just a minority that wouldn't, you know, wouldn't make me feel that I'm not home. Like the harshest experience I've experienced here is when I was once with my son in a park. And one of the kids approached us and he was telling me about his superhero cape and that his name was something, I can't remember. I think he was like 6 or 7 years old. And then his parents called him and just asked him not to play with us or near us. That was like too much for me.
Wow.
Because I can understand that people have certain biases. From the media, from like what they hear from other people. But what I cannot take is my son growing to understand that one day. I don't want him to see that. And this is what makes me want to go back home as soon as possible. Because, you know, it's just not healthy for kids to grow
up
in situations like
them,
that. Yeah. This was the harshest experience because it included my son. The other experiences, I don't care anymore because I can understand. I see the media here. I see the main stream discourse against Muslims and Islam. But I understand that it's like a big agenda and people have an excuse to some extent. So I try not to blame anyone, but when it comes to my son, I just can't. It hurts so bad. Yeah, I feel that the reason why a lot of, the attacks in France and in Brussels, it happened because of people who had, the French or the Belgian citizenship, which means that these people probably had those same experiences and they grew with some negative feelings about that place and that they are not like the rest of human beings. And I don't want my son to grow up in that atmosphere. So I feel like, yeah, I just need to get done here and go back home where we are more respected. And
that's so sad.
Yeah.
I don't want you to leave.
Well, I don't know. Maybe another state, maybe another place, but frankly, in the Midwest, I haven't had
good experiences.
The East Coast has been more welcoming. I don't know. Maybe it's just that. Maybe people changed. I don't know. I've been there between 2006 and 2008. The harsh discourse started then, but then it got harsher and harsher lately. And
it's been really bad lately.
Yeah, and I just can't handle this. And all the shootings of Muslims and the attacks and assaults and everything, I'm afraid, like, for my safety and my child's safety and my husband's safety.
The Hijabi Diaries podcast is produced by Anna Mighty and Aubrey Cedar. Special thanks to Miriam, who you heard from today, for sharing her thoughts. Thanks to the Islamic Center of Bloomington for allowing us to use their space to record this podcast. Thanks to Pearls of Islam for the beautiful music that you heard on this episode. You can hear more of their work by checking them out on Facebook or by visiting their website.
You're listening to the top stories of 2016 on WFHB. Today is number 4 on our countdown, the targeting of Muslim Hoosiers. We're taking a look back at our coverage of issues surrounding the perception and treatment of Muslims in South Central Indiana. That episode of the Hijabi Diaries aired on May 26th. About 2 weeks later, the Daily Local News aired this piece by reporter Wendy Wang, featuring another Muslim resident of Bloomington.
Abigail Leonard made an important change in her life 8 years ago, but that change just meant the Bloomington native is now hearing angry words on the street from strangers.
It was just like, this is just an average citizen that feels totally and completely safe and comfortable shouting these things at me in a public street, you know, like 9 o'clock in the morning. Sometimes you can say, oh, well, you know, it was late at night, they were drunk, they were, you know, but it's like this guy having breakfast in a restaurant.
Leonard made a choice to become a Muslim 8 years ago. 11 years ago, she married Anas Al-Omari, who is a Muslim from Jordan. But she says her husband never pushes his religious belief on her. Instead, she studied Islam independently to better understand her husband, and she says the feminist nature of the hijab is what really inspired her.
For me, I like wearing hijab and covering up because it's like it's taking ownership of my physical body. When you wear hijab, you really have to represent who you are as a person as opposed to like your looks. It makes you focus on deeper things than the superficial.
Kids have always been one of the greatest concerns of Abigail Leonard and her husband. They have a 7-year-old son and a 2-year-old daughter. She says they have been wondering how to explain their religions and beliefs to their son in an appropriate way that can protect him from the hate he will probably experience while not causing him anxiety or fear.
I talked to him about how to stand up for other people and to not be a bully and things like that. So hopefully he internalizes it and realizes it, you know, what makes him different is not making him a bad person.
The discrimination against Muslims in the United States has a lot to do with the political campaign, especially after the Brussels attack in March, which has fired up anti-Muslim assertions in the U.S. campaign trail. Political candidates like Donald Trump and Ted Cruz insisted that Muslims should be kept from getting into America. However, the racism towards Muslims, according to Professor Marjorie Hershey of Political Science Department at IU, has been in the U.S. society since the 9/11 attack 15 years ago.
The underlying racism has always been there and probably always will be. It just gets triggered from time to time when people talk about it more openly. When Donald Trump can say pretty clear racist statements and get away with it, then more other people can say the same thing.
The racism towards certain minority groups comes partly from people's lack of knowledge and understanding about that group. The Islamic Center of Bloomington hosted its first open house event this year, welcoming everyone from the community to join and learn about Islam and how Muslims fit into the community by listening to presentations.
So what I'm going to talk to you about is what we have in common. All human beings have a lot in common.
The open house provided introduction to a media campaign called Open Hearted that the Islamic Center has participated in since the beginning of this year. The campaign is Muslims in Bloomington share their stories online about how they feel about their faith and how they practice it on a daily basis. People got to meet Muslims at the open house and have in-person conversations with them, which, according to Anna Mighty, the founder of the Open Hearted Campaign, is the best way to get to know the Muslim community.
Just so that people have a way to get information from a accurate source and kind of take that information into account when they're formulating their opinions on us as a minority group.
Mighty says that since the campaign has started, more than 300 people have pledged to be open-hearted, meaning that they want to foster positive relationships with the Muslim community and support them as a minority group in the society. Being a member of a minority group in Bloomington, Abigail Leonard says she is aware that her religious belief really matters. Sometimes she tries to tone it down by picking more Western-style clothes to wear, as she thinks it feels less intimidating to non-Muslims in the community.
I feel like it's my responsibility as a Muslim to make people more comfortable with me. I feel like that's practicing my religion because I'm extending a kindness to somebody. I'm making myself more approachable so they feel at ease and can really get to know what I'm about, and so they can take that somewhere else and not have a misconception later.
With efforts made by the Islamic Center and the Open Hearted Campaign, Muslims in Bloomington reaches out to the community to help people get a better understanding of their community. Reporting for WFHB, this is Wendy Wang.
That story aired on the Daily Local News on June 13th, just as we were hearing news about Omar Mateen, who opened fire at a gay nightclub in Orlando, killing 49 people and wounding 53 others. Mateen reportedly swore allegiance to the leader of ISIL during the attack. The massacre provoked another series of debates in which Islam was often framed in some way as a problem. On June 15th, the Daily Local News aired a story about Bloomington's response to the mass shooting. This story is introduced by anchor Kelly Worley.
A candlelight vigil in honor of the Orlando shooting victims drew more than 1,000 people to Bloomington City Hall last night. The event was organized by Bloomington Pride. It featured speakers from many local organizations. We bring you some of those comments now for today's WFHB Community Report. The first speaker in this next clip is Hannah Fidler, who spoke about LGBTQ Muslims.
When I heard the news about the tragedy in Orlando, I was flying back from an interfaith LGBTQ iftar in Toronto. An iftar is the meal that Muslims eat to break the daily fast in Ramadan. The event was filled with so many LGBTQ Muslims, some of whom were also refugees. There were also so many straight Muslim allies and non-Muslim friends of every gender and sexuality. It was a night of tremendous hope and resistance. People of all genders, sexualities, and religions praying and breaking bread together. We could all just be ourselves and feel loved. But now the LGBTQ Muslim community is shocked and grieving, just like you. Like you, we are angry and scared. In the words of activist Al-Farouq Kaki, LGBTQ Muslims don't just stand with you, we are you. But many people aren't aware of LGBTQ Muslims and their struggles, especially those of refugees. There are very few places where we can feel accepted and affirmed as both Muslim and queer. I certainly do not represent all Muslims, but then again, neither does Omar Mateen. And as a queer Muslim, I fear that this atrocity in Orlando will spread Islamophobia even more and alienate some of the most vulnerable queer Muslims who really need support. We all need as much love and solidarity as we can find during these times.
I'd like to call up Rabbi Brian Besser from the congregation Beth Shalom.
We express our pain and outrage, our sympathy and support for the victims of the attack in Orlando and their families. We condemn the act of violence of one hate-filled individual. We note that he specifically targeted gays and lesbians, and we impugn that part of the wider American culture that still marginalizes the LGBT community and creates the atmosphere in which it is okay to attack people of different sexual and gender identities. The central value upon which my tradition rests is that every human being is in the image of God exactly as he or she is created. We also condemn the exploitation of the tragedy to renew the call for discriminating against Muslims. As Jews, we know full well what it's like to be the object of discrimination from members of the dominant society who distrust us, malign us, and falsely accuse us. We stand with our Muslim sisters and brothers who are as outraged as we are by this act of terrorism.
That was audio recorded in Bloomington at a June 14th vigil for the victims of the Pulse nightclub shooting. You've been listening to the top stories of 2016 on WFHB, and that brings us to the end of number 4 on our countdown. We've been taking a look back at our coverage of issues surrounding the perception and treatment of Muslims in South Central Indiana. In the months following that vigil, another issue concerning Islam began bubbling to the surface in Bloomington. In September, it was announced that as many as 20 refugee families, potentially including some Syrians, were planned to move to the city. That story, and the ensuing uproar from a group of local residents, is the subject of our next episode of the Top Stories of 2016. Tune in at 5:30 p.m. tomorrow to hear that show. The Top Stories of 2016 is a production of the WFHB News Department. Today's episode was produced by myself, Joe Crawford. The Hijabi Diaries was produced by Aubrey Cedar and Anna Mighty. Wendy Wang contributed to today's reports. For WFHB, I'm Joe Crawford.